High-speed jigsaw is a pastime best undertaken by an individual who is suffering from subtle brain damage and who consequently is afflicted by intense and uncontrollable spells of obsession. Shepard's tragic mental condition usually gave him a surprising advantage whenever he turned his full attention to a picture puzzle. He was currently reconstructing a complex image of an ornate Shinto temple surrounded by cherry trees. Although he'd started this 2,500-piece project only shortly after he and Dylan checked into the motel, he had already completed perhaps a third of it. With all four borders locked in place, Shep worked diligently inward. The boy, Dylan thought of his brother as a boy even though Shep was 20, sat at a desk in the light of a tubular brass lamp. His left arm was half raised, and his left hand flapped continuously, as though he were waving at his reflection in the mirror that hung above the desk. But in fact, he shifted his gaze only between the picture that he was assembling and the loose pieces of the puzzle piled in the open box. Most likely, he didn't realize that he was waving, and certainly he couldn't control his hand. Ticks, rocking fits, and other bizarre repetitive motions were symptoms of Shep's condition. Sometimes he could be as still as cast bronze, as motionless as marble, forgetting even to blink. But more often than not, he flicked or twiddled his fingers for hours on end or jiggled his legs or tapped his feet. Dylan, on the other hand, had been so securely taped to a straight-backed chair that he couldn't easily wave, rock, or twiddle anything. Inch-wide strips of electrician's tape wound around and around his ankles, lashing them tightly to the chair legs. Additional tape bound his wrists and his forearms to the arms of the chair. His right arm was taped with the palm facing down, but his left palm was upturned. A cloth of some kind had been wadded in his mouth when he'd been unconscious. His lips had been taped shut. Dylan had been conscious for 2 or 3 minutes, and he hadn't connected any pieces of the ominous puzzle that had been presented for his consideration. He remained clueless as to who had assaulted him and as to why. Twice when he'd tried to turn in his chair to look toward the twin beds in the bathroom which lay behind him, a rap alongside the head delivered by his unknown enemy had tempered his curiosity. The blows weren't hard, but they were aimed at the tender spot where earlier he had been struck more brutally, and each time he nearly passed out again. If Dylan had called for help, his muffled shout wouldn't have carried beyond the motel room, but it would have reached his brother less than 10 feet away. Unfortunately, Shep wouldn't respond either to a full-throated scream or to a whisper. Even on his best days, he seldom reacted to Dylan or to anyone, and when he became obsessed with the jigsaw puzzle, this world seemed less real to him than did the two-dimensional scene in the fractured picture. With his calm right hand, Shep selected an amoeba-shaped piece of pasteboard from the box, glanced at it, and set it aside. At once he plucked another fragment from the pile and immediately located the right spot for it, after which he placed a second and a third, all in half a minute. He appeared to believe that he sat alone in the room. Dylan's heart knocked against his ribs as though testing the soundness of his construction. Every beat pushed a pulse of pain through his clubbed skull, and in sickening syncopation the rag in his mouth seemed to throb like a living thing, triggering his gag reflex more than once. Scared to a degree that big guys like him were never supposed to be scared, unashamed of his fear, entirely comfortable with being a big, frightened guy, Dylan was as certain of this as he had ever been certain of anything. 29 was too young to die. If he'd been 99, he'd have argued that middle age began well past the century mark. Death had never held any allure for him. He didn't understand those who reveled in the goth subculture, their abiding romantic identification with the living dead. He didn't find vampires sexy. With its glorification of murder and its celebration of cruelty to women, gangster rap music didn't start his toes tapping either. He didn't like movies in which evisceration and decapitation were the primary themes. If nothing else, there were certain popcorn spoilers. He supposed that he'd never be hip. His fate was to be as square as a saltine cracker. But the prospect of being eternally square didn't bother him a fraction as much as the prospect of being dead. Although scared, he remained cautiously hopeful. For one thing, if the unknown assailant had intended to kill him, Surely he would already have assumed room temperature. He had been bound and gagged because the attacker had some other use for him.